You're listening to the Judicial Watch weekly update with Tom Fitton.
Judicial Watch President Tom Fitton here with our weekly update on social media. Thank you, as always, for joining us. Much to talk about. The Biden balloon haplessness continues. We've got some details on that, plus some activism and accountability that needs to be done with respect to our military leadership. Update on the Biden document fiasco, University of Delaware edition, plus Judicial Watch has exposed critical race theory in our nation's capital schools. You won't believe the plans they have in store for the poor children here in the District of Columbia. First up, though, is the balloon scandal, which continues unabated by this corrupt and incompetent Biden administration. As you know, a few weeks ago, the United States Air Force, NORAD specifically, tracked a balloon that they knew to be of Chinese origin over the United States and just let it fly for days on end before they were embarrassed into shooting it down off the coast of South Carolina. And since then, because of that political embarrassment, they've shot down three more objects, unidentified flying objects, in Canada, over Alaska, and over U.S. territory in Lake Huron. Now, they still won't tell us what those objects were. They suggest they may have been nothing more than, in one case, a balloon set in motion by hobbyists. But it shows you that NORAD, in the least, well, let's put it this way. If NORAD suggested that the President of the United States order the shoot down of weather balloons or hobby balloons, that's one scandal. And if, again, the Chinese were able to get balloons or other foreign agents were able to get or countries were able to get balloons over U.S. territory, that's a separate scandal. So I don't know. I'm not reassured by any of the conclusions or answers, but we should all be skeptical when they don't want to tell us the answers. Pretending not to know what the balloons were about. I don't know what's worse. They don't know, or they're pretending not to know. Again, this is the problem we have with the Biden administration. They won't tell you information unless they're embarrassed or politically pressured into telling you this information. And it's not like it's just another day in Washington, D.C., and just another scandal. This is the first, as the NORAD general, I listened to the press conference that he had held shortly after they shot down three additional balloons. This was the first kinetic action, the phrase was, by NORAD in its history over the United States. So I want you to think about this. It hasn't happened since World War II, our planes having shot something in a defensive way like that. And in the case of the Lake Huron incident, there was a missile that was shot that missed, that they didn't bother telling anyone about until they were forced to admit it because Fox News reported it early on Monday. So this is the problem we have. We have a Biden administration, as it was said, whose first reaction to this national security crisis is political, which is to cover their you-know-whats, and the safety of the American people is always secondary to them. And then, of course, President Biden, it bears repeating because virtually no one else in the media will repeat it, but you can tell Judicial Watch to be straight with you on this, is that Biden is personally compromised because of his business relationships, his family's business relationships with the Chinese communists. It happened while he was vice president, as Judicial Watch has uncovered. You had Hunter Biden travel on Air Force Two at least five times with his father, one of which we know he conducted business, and infamously his father was involved in that. And then since then, the evidence is after he was vice president, they were trying to come to and may have come to shady deals with the Chinese communists in a way as to disguise Joe Biden's involvement in those deals. So when the Chinese are calculating what to do and how to prod, it should go without saying that one of the factors they consider is the fact that Joe Biden's on the take, and they know he's on the take because he's on the take from them. Same goes for Russia and Ukraine. So that's the big issue. The other big issue is the failure of our military to take this issue seriously. I don't know what's going on in NORAD, but you know, I kind of half jokingly refer to often or have observed they probably spend as much energy tracking Santa as they do tracking threats to the United States. And I know that's not literally true, but that's the perception I have. My guess is they spend a lot of time and energy at the fourth quarter of the year tracking Santa. You may have seen NORAD track, you know, issue their Santa trackers. And I think we had investigated that, and they told us it was all volunteer, which I didn't buy. But you know the way bureaucracies are. Projects like that, especially senseless projects like that, take an outsized role in an organization's activities. Now, do I think they weren't doing their job and because they're tracking Santa or planning to track Santa, or maybe just doing after action reports on tracking Santa in the case of the Chinese balloons? I don't think so. But it shows you that NORAD at least needs a new, let's put it this way, we need to analyze their leadership to see whether it's effective or not. And I think the fact that they let a balloon into our territory without sufficient response is an indictment. And then thirdly, we have the political correctness, the wokeism, the effort by the General Officer Corps, both of the Air Force and generally in the Biden Defense Department, to impose and with almost this crazed fanaticism, this critical race theory agenda, this social engineering on our not only the rising leadership in our academies, the Air Force Academy, West Point, the Navy Academy, et cetera, but also within the ranks of those already who have been serving for some time and those who are just coming in. And this focus on politics as opposed to, you know, finding and then defeating the enemy is I think, ruining our military. And I think the left wants our military ruined. They don't want the military doing traditional defense work. For the left, the military are enforcers for their political agenda. And so that's why it's concerning when they start engaged in political brainwashing of their troops as opposed to doing their basic job, which is to protect U.S. territory, which demonstrably they failed at. And I don't understand where Congress has been. They've had briefings. Obviously, the briefings have gone poorly. Both Democrats and Republicans are upset with the way the Biden administration has handled this issue. But where are the hearings? I mean, if I were in the House or if I were in the Senate, I would have had the generals and the national security officials for the Biden administration in public hearings almost immediately after the initial balloon incursion by the Chinese communists. I mean, just think of the risks that have been exposed to by this incursion, the potential threats that face Americans. I mean, we had something, you know, look to the sky, right? Don't look up over our heads. People thinking something's going to drop on their heads. Not, you know, not everyone thought something was going to drop on their heads. But those who were paying attention, I think, were rightly concerned, you know, that someone was asleep at the switch and continues to minimize this issue. Joe Biden was down, you know, it took him 2 weeks to say something directly about this, and was all designed to minimize what had happened. So this is a real concern. And the other concern I have is there's this almost reflexive defensiveness for the Chinese. They talk about, well, the Chinese made a mistake, and they talk about the Chinese communists as if they're like just a Western political party as opposed to a totalitarian entity that seeks to increase and expand power at the expense of any semblance of human liberty and human life. And you saw this with General Milley. And this is where I think leadership needs to change. And the fact that he's still chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff is an abomination. Judicial Watch has been investigating the unprecedented politicism that he's been involved in as chief of staff. He was literally an anti-Trump general. And he's had a conversation with Nancy Pelosi, essentially reassuring her that, no, don't worry, you know, I'm running the show. If President Trump wants to do anything crazy, I'll be there to stop him. as opposed to, you know, Speaker Pelosi, you need to be speaking to the President of the United States. I report to him. And if he gives me lawful orders, I'm going to follow him. But instead, there was this, in my view, seditious conspiracy with Nancy Pelosi against the sitting president. And then on top of that, he was calling China to reassure the Chinese communists, don't worry, if we plan to do anything, we're going to warn you. We're going to warn you. And my colleague, and you've probably seen him on our channel and on our media, Chris Farrell, who directs, he's a member of our board, he directs our investigative department, he's a former counterintelligence officer with the Army. You know, he thinks General Milley should be court-martialed. And I think he wrote a piece on this that's well worth sharing in large measure with you. Mark Milley, as I said, is chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, Chris says should be subject to what is called an Article 32 hearing. And those of you who are veterans probably know very much what I'm talking about here. And it comes under the provisions of the Uniform Code of Military Justice for his conduct and statements as reported in various media and a book. An Article 32 hearing is the military equivalent of a civilian grand jury, and should probable cause of the commission of a crime be established, it would lead to General Milley's court-martial. And as Chris notes, the Army has an affirmative duty to maintain good order and discipline, especially with regard to senior leader misconduct. And he compares it to the case of a general who, you know, you may recall from history. If I guess if you're watching this, you've probably taken a history class, more or less, and you probably do remember him. Billy Mitchell. He was a brigadier general who was court-martialed in 1925 for the following remarks concerning two deadly military aviation incidents. These are the statements he made. These incidents are the direct result of the incompetency, criminal negligence, and almost treasonable administration of the national defense by the Navy and War Departments. The bodies of my former companions in the air molder under the soil in America and Asia, Europe, and Africa. Many, yes, a great many, sent there directly by official stupidity. So in today's day and age, that probably wouldn't have batted an eyelash. But in 1925, those statements resulted in him being found guilty of, quote, conduct of a nature to bring discredit upon the military service. And then the court suspended Mitchell from rank, command, and duty with the forfeiture of all pay and allowances for 5 years. He resigned from his commission as an Army officer, and he was held accountable for what his colleagues in the military thought to be egregious undermining of the military leadership in a way that went beyond the pale. Now, Chris reports how General Milley called his communist Chinese military counterpart in October 2020 and January 2021 with unauthorized promises and assurances of advance warnings of U.S. military intentions and actions. America learned of these contacts through the book Peril, authored by Bob Woodward and Robert Costa. In the book, Milley is quoted as saying, General Lee, I want to assure you that the American people is stable and everything is going to be okay. We're not going to attack or conduct any kinetic operations against you. And then, and this is the kicker, General Lee, you and I have known each other for 5 years. If we're going to attack, I'm going to call you ahead of time. It's not going to be a surprise. How could a general say that? I mean, that's treachery. If we're going to attack, our people's lives are on the line, and we're going to increase the risk to their lives by alerting the Chinese, this general says that? What? And he admitted he made the calls, and he said that he acted within his authority, a spokesman said for him, as a senior military advisor to the president and secretary of defense. But in fact, he didn't consult either. And he got a copy of the call transcript, the authors got a copy of the call transcript between Pelosi and Milley. The book provides detailed quotes from both General Milley and Mrs. Pelosi. In one exchange, Pelosi at length attacks Mr. Trump, saying they couldn't even stop him from an assault on the Capitol, and that he's crazy. You know, he's crazy. He's been crazy a long time. So don't say you don't know what his state of mind is. He's crazy, and what he did yesterday is further evidence of his craziness. But anyway, I appreciate what you said. Milley responds to Pelosi, Madam Speaker, I agree with you on everything. He is attacking the commander-in-chief in a seditious manner with his political opponent, Speaker Pelosi. And by the way, we sued for these records, and they're still giving us the runaround. The author's quote, General Milley, is saying, bleep that sugar, I'll fight him, talking about Trump. If they want to court-martial me or put me in prison, have at it, but I will fight from the inside. And as Chris points out, a general fighting from the inside against the president is the very definition of subversion. So, obviously, what Milley did pales in comparison, or what Mitchell did back in 1925, what General Mitchell did, pales in comparison to what Milley did. And the fact that he hasn't been court-martialed and is still serving as chairman of Joint Chiefs of Staff is really an indictment of our political system that rewards subversion, rewards sedition, as long as the target of this anti-Republican, anti-constitutional activity is of the right political persuasion, mainly a Republican or a conservative, or in the case of President Trump himself. So this is something we're very concerned about. We're still fighting in federal court for the records of this subversive, seditious conversation with Speaker Pelosi, or now former Speaker Pelosi. But I tell you, if you want to know why it is the Chinese feel that they can send balloons in a way that are, or at least one balloon in a way that highlights their ability, brazen ability to attack the United States in a way that was really an attack on the United States, it's because of military leaders like Milley. Milley's their buddy, and he was working with the Chinese against our elected president. So I don't trust him as far as I could throw him. And certainly the Senate and the House should take steps to investigate him and remove him. I think the military, I don't know if impeachment applies to the military. But certainly you can have a hearing or two into this sedition, don't you think? So there's a big list of Republicans, a big list of things that the House Republicans need to be investigating if they're serious about our national security, about the seditious conspiracy of the deep state, which isn't just the Justice Department and the FBI, it's the upper echelons of our military establishment. So this crisis of corruption has deep national security ramifications, and you can see with General Milley at the helm in the instance of the Chinese balloon attack, we're placed at risk as a result of his incompetent corruption and contempt for our constitutional system. Terrible stuff. Oh, by the way, speaking of President Trump, I mentioned to you that he spoke at a big Judicial Watch event down in Florida a few weeks ago. Well, we did record the speech, so it's available on our various social media channels. And, you know, Judicial Watch has had an interesting relationship with Trump because we've seen him as a whistleblower, a crime victim, a witness to government corruption, and also someone who could combat government corruption. I think he's been, at least in terms of his personal activity while he was president, meaning his interests, he was the most transparent president in American history in terms of advocating for, first of all, disclosing. People hated his tweets, but at least they were transparent. And I know directly he wanted war documents to be transparent, and many were, it looks like, because of his personal involvement. So needless to say, or maybe you don't know this, but he's a big fan of Judicial Watch. So I thought I'd share a section of the speech with you here, just showing how much he respects Judicial Watch and the great team that I'm lucky to work with here. So let's show a little bit of that speech.
It's a great group. And I dealt with Tom and with Chris. Chris is over here. I think I'll tell you what, I've watched him for a long time on television. And now I get to meet Mr. and Mrs. And it's a great, great couple, all great couples. The people in this room are very special. You built this country. We have other people ripping down our country and tearing our country apart Nobody's seen anything like it, and the world is laughing. They're very happy about it, most of them. They're very happy. But I want to thank Tom. He's a warrior in the trenches of Washington, and the trenches got a little deeper over the last couple of years. And he knows how to win. We work together on a lot of different things, along with Chris and the whole group, and they know how to win. I also want to express my gratitude to the rest of the Judicial Watch team. It's a great team. It's a fantastic team of people. I know so many of them. And Paul, I want to thank you for being here. A good lawyer. He's got a, where is Paul? Stand up, Paul. Paul, great. That's great. Really fantastic guy, real talent. Just think of what Judicial Watch has accomplished in the recent years. It's been amazing. I just asked for this, Tom, because, you know, we talk and we get together and all, but it's an incredible thing that you've done. You fought tirelessly for election integrity, suing states across the nation and winning that failed to obey federal election laws. And just last month, you settled a historic lawsuit against New York City. Very honorable, very honest place, resulting in a removal of more than 440,000 ineligible names on the voter rolls. But you filed a lawsuit against the Biden Department of Homeland Security to defend Americans' freedom of speech, and that was a very big one. A few weeks ago, you exposed the Biden administration's secret midnight flights trafficking migrant children to cities across America. The whole thing is just crazy. And you remain a leading force in demanding strong, secure, sovereign borders. We have the worst border. You sued the Biden Justice Department for records detailing the FBI's outrageous interference to cover up the truth about the Biden crime family. From the Russia hoax to the Ukraine witch hunt, from the persecution of Brett Kavanaugh, have you ever seen anything like that? The Trump administration had no better ally in our fight to drain the swamp in Washington and beyond. Of course, the world will forever be grateful to the patriots of Judicial Watch for their role in exposing the brazen criminality of crooked Hillary Clinton. Has anybody ever heard of crooked Hillary Clinton? I don't think she likes me. The word is she does not like me much. The corrupt political class that Judicial Watch fights so relentlessly is the single greatest danger to American freedom and democracy. I really believe that. You know, I make oftentimes in my speeches, I talk about the dangers that we have. And I say the dangers from within are, I think, far greater than the dangers on the outside. On behalf of the millions of Americans who want truth and transparency, I want to just thank you for the job you do. All of you guys, you did a fantastic job. And I know you have a lot of supporters here, and I hope you continue to support them. And that's why I'm here.
Well, those were gracious words by the 45th president of the United States. Now, I know he's running for office. Just because I'm running the speech doesn't mean that either I or Judicial Watch or, is endorsing his candidacy or opposing anyone else's, et cetera. But it highlights that this senior government official, former president of the United States, thinks highly of Judicial Watch. And I hope you follow his lead and support Judicial Watch with not only you know, financial support, but by spreading the word about what we do. Now, speaking of President Trump being a crime victim, let's bring you up to date on the Clinton, I shouldn't say, well, I guess it is Clinton. Clinton's always behind some of this corruption, right? There's always a Clinton issue with regard to government corruption, even years after they're out of office. And in this case, we've had the targeting of Trump over these documents that he had after he left office. And as I've described to you before, Judicial Watch was in court, I think it was 10 years ago now, for records that Bill Clinton had after he left office, some of which were arguably classified, the so-called Clinton sock drawer tapes. And the Justice Department and the National Archives and a federal court all told us there's nothing you can do. No one can second guess the president with respect to taking any records from office. It designated him as personal or classified. In fact, the Justice Department told the court, in the courtroom, we've got the transcript, if he has records after he leaves office, they're presumptively personal. And arguably that analysis also applies to former vice presidents. They're harassing former Vice President Pence on this issue. You know, Barack Obama, it's amazing how he's able to escape, but that's another topic. And of course, Vice President Biden, under his new theory of the law, has been caught up, and he's been doing He's had classified records in a way that suggests that they were being misused under his theory of the law by people like Hunter Biden or himself. On top of that, you've got the records that were found in his office, some of which were from his days as senator. And you may recall, Judicial Watch is suing, along with the Daily Caller News Foundation, for records from his Senate days that are being held at the University of Delaware. And they have a secret deal that they don't want to give us any information on. And we've been in court pushing and pushing and pushing. We asked for the FOIA. We asked for the records under FOIA because the University of Delaware is supported with taxpayer dollars. And the court says, well, no, there's no record here that tax dollars are being used to support these records. And then we're like, well, what about it, this deal? You know, were taxpayer dollars used to support this deal? We can't even get a copy of the secret deal. And they don't want to give us any records about that. Isn't that curious? And so we've been in court time and time again. And I keep on saying, it's not just a matter of, you know, suing. You've got to push and push and push. And Judicial Watch just smashes through the stone walls legally so often and so successfully. That's why we're the number one open records litigator in the country, not because of the volume of the work, but because of the success of the work. And so even up in Delaware, we've had the appeals court side with us at least once on getting more information about the secret deal to hide these records from the American people. Now, of course, now that it's been confirmed, as we suggested might be the case, that there's classified records from his days as vice president, the FBI, unlike what they did for Trump, went there and did a quiet little secret review of the Senate records, and they won't tell us whether they have any classified information in addition to what they've already found. So we already know that the public interest in getting access to this information has been further heightened by the FBI's looking at these records for classified information. By the way, none of these rules, as I've highlighted to you before, protect the former Senator Biden from being held accountable for having classified records he has no business having, which is any classified records from his days as a senator. So there's significant legal liability. To the degree there is any legal liability, it's significant because of his records that he's had that are classified from his days in the Senate. So I think it's quite curious that they don't want to tell us what they found in the Senate records that they've been hiding from the American people, and that only Judicial Watch and the Daily Caller News Foundation has been trying to get. Judicial Watch is continuing to be in court up in Delaware about these Senate records. It's not just classified records we're concerned about, but as you know, he's been accused of sexual assault while he was a senator. There may be records that reflect on that. You know, and other conduct he had, especially given his corruption. While he was vice president and afterwards, is there any doubt he was corrupt while he was a senator? So I think there are core corruption issues that could be exposed by full disclosure of these Senate records. So, isn't it curious that it's only little old Judicial Watch and our friends at the Daily Caller News Foundation that are doing the heavy lifting to get these records? You would think the former records, the records of a sitting president from his days as a senator for decades would be of interest to the public and the media. Nope. If there's anything dangerous, the media doesn't want to see it. That's becoming readily apparent with this corrupt media when it comes to Joe Biden. But you can trust Judicial Watch to work hard to get the truth about the full record of Joe Biden. Next up, we've got, this is kind of fun. I want to tell you something. People say, well, how is it you decide what to do at Judicial Watch? How do you decide what to investigate? You know, how do you find out about all this stuff? You know how we found out about most of the stuff we want to investigate? We read the newspaper. I mean, this city is so corrupt, but on top of its corruption is the corruption of it being in plain sight and no one doing anything about it. And Judicial Watch is kind of, has been the guy, you know, from the old fable. The emperor has no clothes. We say, what's going on here? Why isn't there an investigation? And so often we read something in the newspaper, or I say newspaper, it kind of dates me, right? I'm older than I care to admit to. but we're online and we see this information, and you'd be surprised how few people actually follow up on what is likely to be evidence of corruption or government misconduct and abuse. And so in the case of this next story, I was reading in the Washington Post about the D.C. school's efforts to upgrade or change or update their social studies curriculum. And they were using language I don't remember specifically that made me think, oh, this sounds like it's going to be full of critical race theory. Sure enough, I went and looked at the document. I looked at it for literally 1 minute and passed it along to my colleagues who examined it more closely and did an excellent report exposing how D.C. public schools plan to overhaul their social studies curriculum with CRT, anti-Americanism, and leftist propaganda, starting from kindergarten through children being a senior in high school. It's a great story, and what I love about it is we didn't have to file a FOIA lawsuit. We just went to the D.C. government website, and they have helpfully posted their draft for public comment social studies standards that they put up there in December of last year, December 16, 2022. So all the proof is here. I encourage you to read it. You're going to be outraged, especially since you, as a U.S. citizen, I think, have a right to have some say in the way our nation's capital is run. At least constitutionally you have that right, because Congress has plenary authority over the way the District of Columbia is run. So everything I'm complaining about now is happening because of the sufferance of Congress, which is supposed to be responsible for the nation's capital and its governance. And as we highlight, to address the perceptions of white Western bias in curricula, public schools surrounding the nation's capital are revamping social studies courses for all students with critical race theory, anti-Americanism, and a multitude of leftist propaganda. And the new District of Columbia Public Schools social studies standards include teaching kindergartners about gender identity, second graders about same-sex relationships, and gender fluidity in civilizations. And I just love how they use these words as if there's anything meaningful to they're meaningful to anyone outside of the crazed Marxist extremists that are setting up these standards to abuse our children with. Fifth graders about queer culture and sixth graders about harmful border policies and how racism, privilege, and bias affect the distribution of resources. Critical race theory, queer theory, all being taught from kindergarten through high school. And you know, D.C. public schools are one of the worst in the nation, as we point out in this Corruption Chronicles blog piece. So I encourage you to go off into our Corruption Chronicles blog on our website at judicialwatch.org. And we also have our investigative bulletin blog. And those places we do journalism on government corruption that, frankly, a lot of other media follow our leads on. We break news on government corruption in addition to just doing our litigation and investigations. We do this basic journalism, as I'm talking about. And so this is an important piece. I've already shared it with Congress because I think Congress needs to get on it. But D.C. is one of the worst schools. They run one of the worst school systems in America. It's has one of the lowest math, reading, and standardized test scores, as well as an outrageously high dropout rate. A few years ago, the D.C. State Board of Education revealed in a study that the teacher turnover rate is much higher than the national average. And for instance, it's nearly 20% of teachers leave each year, 55% quit after 5 years, and most schools don't keep a principal for more than 5 years. So our schools are a mess here in D.C. And I just think of this, the children who are deprived of a basic education that would give them the sort of functional literacy and other academic skills necessary for them to succeed in society, and they're denied that almost annually here in a way that is just heartbreaking. But on top of that, these bureaucrats don't care about that, right? And that's not heartbreaking. That's scandalous and outrageous. And you see what's in this curriculum. And I encourage you, don't listen to me. Don't listen to our Corruption Chronicles blog. I encourage you to go and look at the document. We're going to provide a link to it here. And it's 160 pages or so of their agenda, their propaganda, critical race theory agenda that is based on anti-Americanism, racialism and racism, segregation. Yes, the left likes segregation now, in case you haven't noticed. And as I say, this queer theory agenda, which is trying to engage in sex talk, essentially, with young children in D.C. public schools. So this began back in 2019. The leftists decided to do a revamp of the curriculum. They in 2019, they began to overhaul the subjects to promote more culturally relevant instruction for students in the nation's capital. What do you mean culturally relevant? How is reading, writing, and arithmetic culturally relevant? And they wanted to address perceptions of white Western bias in curricula. What is Western bias? The founders, the foundations of Western civilization, there's bias in teaching kids about that. The foundations of America, that's just anti-American Marxist claptrap. So you now know, you know, and there's more here, but you can see what they were up to. And what they came up with is outrageous. And I'm going to read you our analysis. It's a great summary. Besides gender identity, kindergartners will learn to understand their racial, ethnic, and religious identities. In first grade, teachers will identify, in first grade, kids will identify a leader who has made their community more just and inclusive. So they're trying to define any conservative out. Second graders will analyze the daily lives of different individuals in ancient societies, including histories of same-sex relationships and, as I said, gender fluidity in civilizations. Second graders. In third grade, DC students will be taught the importance of affirming spaces, which are described as safe spaces for people to express their identities. So whenever you hear affirming spaces, that's the code for segregated spaces. They segregate people by either sex, race, or ethnicity. Children, they're doing this too, by the way. In middle school, students will evaluate the extent to which racism, privilege, and bias have impacted global resource distribution and how resource distribution has influenced racism and imperialism. I mean, is that written by Fidel Castro or what? By seventh grade, students are introduced to the European colonizer, and they will scrutinize how liberty, freedom, and democracy were applied to different Americans on the basis of religion, socioeconomic status, or class, race, and gender. Eighth graders will learn how protests can lead to change, and they will investigate how media and social media can shape the way the public understands an issue. In high school, the high school courses will include Eurocentrism and its lasting impact on people of color, as well as the effects of colonization on indigenous people. You know, and their definition of indigenous is obviously so leftist as to, you know, belie belief. Classes will also focus on the invention of race as a social construct and how primarily white men fought for their rights while simultaneously oppressing others, such as women, black, indigenous, and other people of color. And they'll be go on, and finally, high school seniors on their way out will be given their Hate America card. That's not literally there, but this is what they're being asked to learn. You'll see what I mean in joking about it, about the shortcomings of democracy in the U.S. and the ways that black, indigenous, and people of color, as well as queer youth, are impacting change. So does this sound like something that kids should be taught, or does this sound like something that the Democratic Party is concocting in order to create a new generation of Marxist activists to promote their socialist radical communist agenda that is based on attacking people on the basis of race, destroying the basis for American civilization, undermining our founding principles? When you look in the details here, this is a charitable interpretation of it. They talk about intersectionality. Look up intersectionality. You can see it's just CRT to the max. I mean, this document is critical race theory on steroids. 160 pages of brainwashing children from kindergarten through high school. And it will all happen unless Congress acts with the acquiescence of the United States Congress that has a constitutional obligation to manage the affairs of the District of Columbia. So I tell you what, if you don't like this, you need to call your member of Congress. You need to call your senator, call your congressman. You can call them at 202-225-3121 and tell them what you think. Say, I just saw Judicial Watch, and they were highlighting how the D.C. schools are going to be teaching queer studies to children as young as kindergarten. They're going to be talking about gender identity to babies. What's going on there, Congressman? What's going on there, Senator? Are you doing your job? That's what I would say. Of course, you can say what you want because it's a free country. So you communists watching, you can call and promote this communism designed to destroy America, I guess, and hurt our children. But the rest of you patriots, I suspect you're going to call with a different point of view. So this is great work by Judicial Watch. We've already exposed a lot of the segregation, racialism, racism, CRT in schools in the D.C. region as it is. We've been in court trying to stop the critical race theory agenda, often successfully, specifically in California, where they were trying to impose quotas on private boards based on race, identity, sexual identity and ethnicity, all sorts of characteristics that you're not supposed to require quotas about. And we're involved in litigation where in Minnesota, Minneapolis, they have a school contract that it's a union contract where if there are layoffs, it's usually the more senior people are protected, unless they're white. Then blacks get special protection or other aggrieved minorities. It's not clear what standards they're applying. And when it comes to rehiring, people of a certain race get put in the front of the line. And that's outrageously racist and unconstitutional and illegal. And outrageously, a court said, well, that may save money. So maybe it's okay. So we're fighting that battle. And of course, we're also helping parents and teachers who have been abused for opposing this type of curriculum, this critical race theory brainwashing. And as I talked about earlier, we've been suing to gain access to the records about the brainwashing using this repackaged Marxism known as critical race theory, targeting our rising military leadership in our military academies. But do you want the rising officer corps to be indoctrinated with this anti-Americanism? I don't. I prefer our military leadership see America as something worth fighting for, not something worth fighting against. Our country is under attack from within by critical race theory. And Judicial Watch has made it a priority to expose it and stop it wherever we can. So it's that time of year for CPAC. Those of you who follow politics knows it's one of the nation's biggest meetings of conservative activists and leaders. They get together, the candidates come in, they make their pitches. Judicial Watch has been a longtime partner with the American Conservative Union, which puts on CPAC. I've spoken there several times, and I'll be speaking there again in the beginning of March. I think it's the 2nd through the 4th. It's going to be just outside of Washington, D.C. And it's a great event. I encourage you to attend it or at least watch it and follow it online if you're not able to get here in D.C. But I've made many great speeches there, dare I say it. I thought they were pretty good. They were well received. At least I wasn't booed, which counts for something. But I thought it was worth, because I've been talking about the victimization of President Trump, which continues from this Justice Department, from this FBI, from state entities. And in my view, they all know he's done nothing wrong, yet they continue to abuse power to target him. And I've been highlighting this for years, and Judicial Watch has been highlighting it for years. And I was at CPAC a few years ago. I think it was 2019. I was talking to our friends at the Epoch Times, one of the few remaining journalist entities here in Washington that can be relied upon. And let me run a little tape from that, showing you my comments from a few years ago.
You had the use of the dossier. You had the placement of informants on his campaign. You had the agencies taking up his phone records and people associated with him, their phone records. You had the various FISA warrants. You had then the Mueller special counsel operation, all the kind of abusive targeting by the Mueller operation, where, for instance, they went and, behind closed doors or in my view, an improper way, took records from the inaugural committee. Just completely a lawless approach to trying to investigate President Trump. All of that's got to be part of the discussion. And then, of course, you've had Hillary and Clinton interacting and directing all of this through her cutouts. So you had the Clinton law firms meeting with the FBI, the dossier being misused by them, a product of the Clinton and the DNC. And then you have the intersection of all of that with the Democrats on the Hill who are abusing their powers right now and in the past to both leak and now improperly target President Trump.
Well, I'm a little more gray now, but you can see things haven't changed otherwise too much. The corruption continues, the abuse of Trump continues. And one thing that Judicial Watch is concerned about and a priority for Judicial Watch, I know there are a lot of priorities, but our country's under attack in substantial ways from various angles, is the abuse of the Justice Department and the FBI to target political enemies of the Democratic Party and the left. And I tell you, it happens, and it's happened in the past, and but it's kind of they've presumably been outliers. Now, some of you may rightly say they weren't as many outliers as you might think. It might have been more par for the course than I'd like to admit to. But now it's just completely brazen. It's one party using the Justice Department to investigate and jail the leaders of another party. And we really haven't had anything like that in modern American history. And that's what we're facing today. And Judicial Watch has got a number of FOIA lawsuits, litigation, and we've been targeted in some part by this abuse as well. And I'll be talking more about that. But we face attacks to our very Republican form of government from the institutions that we set up to protect our Republican form of government. And Congress has got to get on the ball, and you fellow citizens need to get on the ball and encourage them to get on the ball and do the activism you can do. But you can bet that Judicial Watch will continue to do the heavy lifting on behalf of you, the American people, to protect our Republican form of government, to protect the rule of law, and to preserve and protect the Constitution of these United States of America. And with that, I'll see you here next time on the Judicial Watch Weekly Update.
Thanks for listening to the Judicial Watch Weekly Update with Tom Fitton. For more information, visit www.judicialwatch.org, because no one is above the law.